Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Meaningful Matriarch. Today is January 16th, 2022, and this is not going to be a super long episode. I just want to casually start getting back into my show development. But something I really, as you may have already listened to, I try to address and talk about in the public platform, you know, a lot of the darker side of tribal organizations, tribal life, tribal dynamics that a lot of outsiders may not be completely aware of. And being an Indigenous person, Alaska Native, whatnot, from Alaska, my experiences kind of are similar to others around the country from different tribes, but also very unique because we have this really weird thing that set Alaska apart from pretty much the rest of the country in terms of tribes and things like that. And it was called the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which was established or approved in December of 1971. And under the guise of being this really great thing, as 50 years have passed, pretty much everybody from my generation and younger have said this was like the biggest scam ever. You had a small group of, what, seven men from a very specific region who had no real connections to Native communities, the thousands of Native communities and peoples across the state who had no idea what was going on. But this group of men signed these documents, say basically the government was like, hey, we will let you guys have land, but it's going to be different land than you have lived on for thousands of years. But also you need to sign these cool documents, which in the fine print, you may not completely understand because it's all written in English. And we know that your English isn't super solid, but that's okay. Trust us. You'll be signing away some of your sovereignty rights, like with hunting and fishing, and definitely your subsurface rights and a lot of your land rights. But it's cool because we're going to give you some land and then we're going to establish corporations for you. We totally understand that you've never run a corporation and you don't have any really qualified people anywhere that can run corporations like Western Corporation, but that's okay. We'll give you a guidebook, and then you could just put some of your people in there and you guys will be okay. So fast forward, obviously it's not okay because they were relocated, allotted to less ideal land allotments. A lot of the prime real estate was scooped up by obviously government or non-Native businessmen and whatnot. And go to like the early 90s as, you know, the socioeconomic shift occurred to where our people were realizing, well, we can't really hunt and fish. There was a lot of regulatory interference with fish and game, things like that up in Alaska. So there, this dependence on westernized food systems and education really started to take control. And so a lot of the Native people that got land in 1971 started selling their land, some of it for a couple thousand here and there. And I'm not talking about like little janky plots of land in the middle of nowhere. These were like waterfront properties. And so now when you go back to a lot of these communities like Klawak on Prince of Wales Island, it's pretty primarily all white people that now are living there because they own that land, because they bought that land, and they exploited a lot of that misfortune of our people and the lack of protections of our people when it came to land. But I digress. So now we are in 2022. So if you've been listening to my show, I talk about how we have this unequal classist disparity within our own tribal organizations, corporations, and whatnot, that family size dictates who sits on the board, who gets all these executive positions. There's no real oversight and accountability. So tribal citizens or shareholders cannot blow the whistle of misgovernance and disparity in opportunities and payments and things like that when it comes to our Alaska Native corporations or our tribes for that matter. And that's an unfortunate reality that we have yet to figure out how to address, because the federal government doesn't want to intervene, because then they're like, we cry sovereignty, even though we're accepting their money left and right. And so here we have a lot of have and have nots. And that's a reality. That's behind the smoke screen. That's like the Oz behind everything that people don't realize unless you're within these communities. And so I always call our tribes like the tribal mafia, because family size literally dictates who sits on these tribal council, who sits on these boards. You have a lot of these Alaska Native corporations, you know, who went through this era of, it was primarily a lot of white men were getting put into these CEO positions, VP positions. You know, Gold Belt's a perfect example of that. For decades, because our parents' generation genuinely believed the white man knew better, and so they were just had no problem putting them in these positions, even though their kids were starting to return with equal amounts of education, if not more, and experience. So things are slowly starting to shift. However, it's shifting in a way where basically a mafia would operate. You have these initial board members of like Sea Alaska, Gold Belt, Kloakinia, Craig Tribal. I mean, all these different regional corporations, state corporate, you know, for the whole state, actually, not just Southeast Alaska. And the name matters, because you'll see this generational placement of positions. So like Sea Alaska is a perfect example of that. So you had these board members, a lot of them were related, and then you had the president, like in the 90s, 2000s was a Malat, and then who's their president now, CEO, another Malat. And so equity and opportunity are not synonymous just because we're tribal, and that's the biggest misnomer that I really want to drive home with listeners is tribal politics and these inner tribal workings really basically is just borderline messy, and we don't talk about it enough. You'll see people complaining on like sites like the Alaska Shareholder Underground, but there's really no solution, because shareholders and tribal citizens can't call the government up, of whom they get a lot of money from, and say, hey, these guys are not following the rules. They're just basically creating a system that helps their family, their kids, their whoever's in their circle are getting these opportunities, and it is not being distributed equitably and fairly. So you have that. But now you have Alaska Natives Without Land Group, and they're also called like Southeast Landless Corporation or something. Long story short, these are all Sea Alaska people, lobbyists. This is a lobbying group to get more land inventory, in my opinion, into the Sea Alaska inventory, right? So that will give them a lot more assets. And, you know, for those that don't know, Sea Alaska Native Corporation is in Southeast Alaska and has produced several millionaires over time, not equitably, a lot of them non-native. But yet their shareholders still have low achievement rate in education, are still impoverished. Many of us who are born post-1971, this land that they're going after or that they oversee in trust, they don't let us develop it. They don't let us build homes on it. They don't give any of it for us shareholders to use and improve our lives. So that is the inherent problem with groups like the Alaska Natives Without Land. It sounds nice in their PR spin, their propaganda, but let's be real. They're a lobbyist group just to get more land inventory into their group. Now, the initial concept may have been well-intentioned, right? I think it came out of Petersburg. And there were a number of reasons why these communities like Haines, I think it's Haines, Petersburg, Wrangell, Tenneke, Pelican were left out of ANGSA back in 1971. And I'll have to dive more into that as I research it. But fast forward to now, so Sea Alaska is lobbying Washington, D.C. to let be giving these communities natives land. And not everybody, mind you. So there's a really complicated precedent being set, because are you going to give land just to people who were born before 1971? Or is it going to open up for everybody? Then what about us? So long story short, natives that belong to the Alaska Gold Belt, any of these corporations or a tribe, we don't have land. We don't have land we can go home and build on. And that's why so many of us leave and just don't bother with our tribal corporations anymore, or native corporations and tribal entities. Those are two different things. So there's no oversight, no accountability, really. Yes, they follow the rules to the edge, in my opinion. Tribes are no different. You can Google stories countlessly all across the country of tribal corruption, embezzlement. It's a real thing. Yet there's really no follow through. You still have these council members repeating seats for lifelong and not producing results. They keep getting put in there because they have a larger family. That's the bottom line, not because they're more qualified. Kluak tribe is a perfect example of that. Same with Kluakina Corporation on Prince of Wales Island. So you could have a family of like five PhD kids sitting around there wanting to run for council, but you got a family of no education, no business background, people all going to vote and put their, you know, cousin Larry in because that's their cousin, not because he's qualified for it. So those are the things as you peel back the onion and really start to understand that just because we're tribal, just because we're native, that we have some sort of ethical compass that we follow, because in events and speeches, we like to mention our cultural values. A lot of times our cultural values end where our corporate values begin, where money begins. And so you have this really weird dynamic. And I can honestly say with my whole heart, eat the rich as well within tribal communities. Opportunities are not dispersed equitably. They're not. They're just not. And that is why I often refer to our native corporations and our tribes as the tribal mafia. Because if you start looking and connecting all the names in like Sea Alaska, you can connect them to prior board seats, you can connect them to prior presidents and those opportunities. But yeah, this Alaska Native Without Land is nothing but a lobbying group to get more inventory into Sea Alaska's land inventory, of which we don't really, the shareholders get to benefit off of. I myself only have shares in Sea Alaska because I was given it in a will from my uncle. And so I get maybe, what, $350 a year? And meanwhile, Sea Alaska produced, I don't know how many millionaires over its inception, which I'm sure is true for corporations all over the state. And so, yeah, we need more accountability from the government for these corporations. We need a means for shareholders to protest, to report, to hold our tribal entities accountable. Just because we're tribal and just because we're indigenous does not mean we have this resounding ethical compass. We are just as capitalist as anybody else, and we struggle with the same issues just like anybody else. But the problem is we have no intervention and no means of holding our own people accountable. So that's it for Meaningful Matriarch. I will see you next week.